Good morning. My name is Naveen Kumar, and I'll be presenting this work on subject independent acoustic to articulatory inversion on behalf of the authors. And the two big terms that you should see in this title are subject independent and acoustic to articulatory inversion. I'll initially go briefly over these two terms. So acoustic articulatory inversion, which you, as you also saw from the previous talk, the goal basically is that you're given these raw speech signals, and what you're trying to in effect estimate are the vocal tract dynamics. But obviously you can't work in the raw speech signal domain or these image domain, so you estimate some articulatory and acoustic features, and then in effect, to restate the problem, what you're really trying to do is you're trying to, in this work, we are trying to estimate the these articulatory features from parallel synchronized acoustic features. So given you estimate the acoustic feature vectors from your speech signal, and then we are trying to estimate the articulatory feature vectors. And now, before heading into the subject-independent part of this inversion, let me first discuss what subject-dependent inversion means, because this is usually how it's addressed in the literature. So as I mentioned before, you're trying to estimate articulatory feature vectors given this test utterance. And what makes this subject-dependent, what makes the traditional approach subject-dependent, is that the training and test subjects are identical. So you have parallel acoustic and articulatory feature vectors from a subject, and you use this to develop a model of this mapping from the acoustic to articulatory feature vectors. And then you use that to estimate articulatory feature vectors for the same subject. And this is easy in some ways because you're doing it on the same subject, so the acoustic spaces match, the articulatory spaces match. But what the authors try to look into in this paper is a subject-independent acoustic to articulatory inversion, where given training data from a completely different subject, how would you use that to develop a model that you can then use to estimate articulatory features for a different subject? And it should immediately start becoming obvious that what are the kind of challenges you'll face here. So the acoustic spaces of these two subjects are no more equal. So you cannot think of an intuitive similarity metric for these two subjects. At the same time, the acoustic spaces are not similar, right? So each subject will have their own articulatory ranges. So both the acoustic and the articulatory space are different. And at this point, I would actually want to make it clear that what the authors actually estimate as the articulatory feature vectors are, you can think of it in this fashion. So it is the articulatory feature, they are the articulatory features that the training subject would have produced if he was trying to imitate or mimic the test utterance. You can think of the estimated articulatory feature vectors in that fashion. But why would you want to even do a subject-independent inversion? Why not just stick to the traditional subject-dependent inversion? So subject-dependent inversion is simple and it's easy and it works very well. But the problem is that when you want to extend it to a number of other speakers, you need articulatory data from each of the speakers. But as we all know, articulatory data is not as simple to collect as compared to the acoustic data. So if we could have an approach where you get parallel articulatory acoustic data just for one talker, for one subject, and then you could extend it to any other number of speakers for whom you have only the acoustic data, then such a method would be highly desirable. And then you could think of applications like joint articulatory acoustic speech recognition or synthesis. Given just once you have made your model from that just one subject, and then you can adapt it to any number of speakers you want. And so that is the motivation for this subject independent kind of inversion. And I would now go into the details of how the authors propose to do it. So they do it via minimization of this generalized smoothness criterion for the articulatory trajectories. And the authors initially proposed this in 2010 for subject-dependent inversion, but they found that this could be extended to subject-independent inversion just as well. And what changes in the subject-independent inversion is the second data proximity term. So what you are estimating, this generalized smoothness criterion, what it's doing is that you essentially have different criterion functions for each of these trajectories. So if you have D articulatory features, you would have these such criterion functions. And that is because each articulator is smooth basically to a different degree. So you need different levels of smoothness, which this first term is basically the smoothness penalty. You can think of it as a smoothness penalty. And thus this H function is basically a high-pass filter that you optimize on a development set for this particular articulator, and you do this for each articulator at a time, and you get D such criterion functions. And the first term is your articulatory specific smoothness, which penalizes any rough trajectories that you might estimate otherwise. The second term is the data proximity term, which actually does the estimation from the training data. And you have these two terms here, the eta and the p, where eta are the probable values that your articulatory features could take, and p are the corresponding probabilities. Now let's look into how we could estimate this eta and p. The H, as I mentioned, is optimized on a separate development set for each of the articulatory features. So the way to estimate this, the eta and the p terms, is simple for the subject-dependent case again, and I would come to the subject-independent just after this. But essentially, since your acoustic spaces are similar for the subject-dependent case, what you could, in a sense, do is you could try to estimate these articulatory features, the probable articulatory features, via proximity in the acoustic space. So given test utterance and the acoustic feature vector, what you can do is you can estimate the closest acoustic features from your training data, and then your corresponding articulatory features now become your eta. So you can compute some sort of a Euclidean distance or a Mahalanobis distance from each of these features, acoustic features in your training data. And after you've done that, you can select, say, the top L of these acoustic features. The corresponding articulatory features now become your eta, or the probable values that your articulatory features can take, right? And you can estimate the probabilities as inversely proportional to this distance, because if your acoustic features are closer to the test utterance, then the probability of that being one of the articulated features you would want is higher. And so what we are using in the subject dependent case is a simple Euclidean distance between the acoustic features. And this is the subject dependent version of the generalized smoothness criterion. But the question is, how would you extend this when these two speakers are not the same, when the acoustic spaces are different? Then you can't really compute something like a simple Euclidean distance in this case. So what the authors propose in this work is that you map these acoustic features to a probability space that then allows you to compare these using a simple distance metric that you know of. So the authors achieve this via the concept of a general acoustic space. You can think of the general acoustic space in this fashion. So the general acoustic space you can think of consisting of test utterances, test acoustic feature of acoustic feature vectors from a number of different talkers. And it need not contain any of these training or test talkers. So it's basically something you can think of his perception of the sounds around him. And this general acoustic space, which contains acoustic feature vectors from a number of different speakers, is now clustered into k different clusters. And each of the density in each of these clusters is modeled using a Gaussian mixture model. Then given this acoustic space, now what you can do is you can transform each of these acoustic feature vectors, the training acoustic feature vector and the test acoustic feature vectors, to a probability feature vector, which consists of the posterior probabilities of this acoustic feature vector W having come from each of these clusters. And then you can normalize it so that it sums up to 1. So now that you have mapped your acoustic feature vectors to the probability feature vector phi w, now you can probably think of something, a simple distance metric, like the Euclidean distance metric. And so that is the modified distance metric which is used for the subject-independent case. So instead of you computing simple Euclidean distance among the acoustic features in the subject-independent case, you map them to the probability space, and now you compute the Euclidean distance. This is the modified distance. But you will notice that we still have almost 500,000 frames, and this just for one frame and one articulator. So the computational cost is immense. And so the authors propose, for further reduction in computational cost, the authors propose just comparing distances with only the relevant features. And the way this is done is, and you'll remember that now we just have probability vectors. We don't have acoustic vectors anymore. So these are k-valued probability vectors, and we distribute them into k different bags, where the first bag contains all the probability vectors for which the first component is the highest. The second bag contains all the probability vectors for which the second component is highest, and so on for the kth bag. Now when you get a test utterance, from the acoustic feature vector, you compute this probability feature vector, and then you find the index of the index in that k-valued probability vector for which the component is highest. And suppose the third index has the highest value in this probability vector, then you would just do the comparison with the third bag, and you would not consider the other bags. And for even further reduction in cost, you can just compute the scalar distances now using values along the third index. And then you would do the same kind of sorting which you did earlier, and you would just retain the top L, the closest L acoustic feature vectors, the corresponding articulatory feature vectors would have again become your eta, or the probable values for your articulatory features. And then you can again compute these probabilities as inverse of this, as inverse of the of these distances. So these provide you with the eta and the p for your generalized smoothness criterion in this case. And this requires much lesser multiplications and computation in general. And on a MATLAB implementation, is approximately 40 times faster than the previous approach. And having said this, let me now go into the experiments part. So the authors tested their proposed approach on MoCATEMET articulatory corpus, which has parallel acoustic and acoustic and articulatory data for one male and one female British speaker, who were reading 460 of these timid sentences. The data is split into 80% train, 8% for the development set, and 12% for the test set. The acoustic features used were 13-dimensional MFCCs, and the articulatory features were the electromagnetic articulography sensor data. And these were specifically the sensors that they used, the upper lip, the lower incisor, the tongue tip, tongue body, tongue dorsum, and the velum. And so we use this 14-dimensional raw positional sensor data as our articulatory features. The development set, as I mentioned earlier, was used to optimize the two hyperparameters that we had. One where the high pass filters for each, and then there was a trade-off cost between the smoothness term and the data proximity term. And for building the general acoustic model, the TIMIT training corpus is used with k equal to 32. And for further fair evaluation of this proposed approach, the authors tried three different inversion schemes. So the first inversion scheme is the matched case, or the normal subject-dependent case, where the train and the test subjects are the same. And you use the simple Euclidean distance for the acoustic feature vectors. The second case is where there is a mismatch. The training and the test subjects are not identical, but you ignore this fact, and you still continue to use the subject-dependent or simple Euclidean distance. The third is the proposed approach, where there is a mismatch, and now you're aware of this, and you would like to normalize this mismatch, and so you use the Euclidean distances in this in the probability space via the general acoustic space. And this is a sample estimated curve. So what you're seeing in black is the tongue tip Y articulatory trajectory for one of the male speakers for one of the utterances. The red curve is the one estimated by the subject dependent approach, where the training and testing were both done on the male subject. The pink curve is the one that has been estimated using our approach, and you'll clearly see that the ranges are different, because as I mentioned earlier, you are in essence estimating these trajectories in the articulatory domain of the training subject, right? But you'll see overall, since the trends are similar, the authors propose to use the correlation coefficient as the evaluation metric. And here are some results. And what you would immediately see that the subject-dependent case obviously performs the best. These are correlation coefficients averaged over all the sentences for each of the articulatory features. And the subject-dependent does the best, obviously, because you're training and testing on basically the same the same subject. But what's interesting here is that our proposed approach, where we try to normalize this mismatch in acoustic spaces between the training and the test subjects, actually does better than when you ignore it. So obviously, when you ignore this mismatch in the acoustic spaces and you try to extend your method to adapt your method to a new subject, it does bad. So there is some merit to doing this normalization via the generalized acoustic space. And then we test the same thing by swapping the two subjects, and it does similar. So to conclude, what we have, what the authors demonstrated here is, and is a subject-independent acoustic to articulatory inversion, where you don't need any articulatory data from the test subject. You can build your models on the, you can build your trained models on parallel articulatory acoustic data from the training subject, and you can just adapt that to any subject from whom you have just the acoustic data. And this is done via the concept of the general acoustic space, which actually helps you to do the normalization in the acoustic spaces. But there is a note of caution here is that your general acoustic space obviously needs to be general enough. So if you're looking for some special kinds of speaking styles or language in your test, you should have it in your general acoustic space. So basically, the general acoustic space needs to be general enough. And the authors intend to do a few more things with this, extend this. So they have done some preliminary speech recognition experiments using these articulatory features, inverted articulatory features, jointly with the acoustic features, and it has shown some improvement in recognition accuracy. And the authors would also like to investigate further different kinds of articulatory features from different modalities like real-time MRI video sequences, which might provide some richer information in addition to this EMS sensor data. And recently, in our lab, we have actually collected real-time MRI video sequences from four American English talkers speaking these timid sentences. And you can find more details about that database at this link. And thank you for listening. I'll be happy to answer any questions, or you can even send your questions to the author.
Thank you. So we do have time for questions.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
So I have the main thing is that in this case you have sentences with the exactly same sentences from the two different subjects. So first of all, I would like to say that this is a very interesting approach that the authors have taken. And but the question is also that if since these are exactly the same sentences, how much would the method be affected if they are actually different sentences, the test and the training? So, yeah.
So, exactly the same sentences in the articulatory space, you mean in the Mocha Timid? Or, so the acoustic space sentence comes from a general Timid corpus. So, are you...
No, but in the inversion thing, you're trained on F2 and tested on...
So those are randomized, actually, in a sense. So we wish we had a richer corpus. So
like, for example, yeah. If you try to do something like a cross-validation within the subject, independent...
So we have done, actually. It's pretty stable, these results. So
could you use the microphone, please?
Yeah, so we, if you do a five-fold or, typically, it's a small set, about 450 sentences, and the results are pretty stable. We tried that. Actually, it's a good point, to check
the
out.
The author has this nice demo where he asks you to speak into a microphone, not by the timid sentences, and he shows his approach even for that case. Yeah. So I guess he would have done some sort of a randomized experiment.
Although the point about this correlation features kind of give us some feel for that, how it works, but it's still not intuitive. So, but the phonetic discrimination results are interesting. It's not here, but those are very encouraging, actually.
Okay. Another question? Well, actually, I would have a quick one. In the definition of your generalized smoothness measure or criterion, you had two terms, the articulatory measure smoothness and then the data accuracy.
Right.
And you use a high-pass filter that obviously will introduce some delay if it's a causal filter. Mm-hmm. So will that impact the synchrony between the smoothness definition and the data accuracy?
No, actually, the filters are fairly
we've done both a general filter for each trajectory on joint design. We have a pretty fast recursive design for that. It's pretty fast, so it doesn't actually.
So the delay is small.
Delay is very small.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So if there are no more questions, we move on to the next speaker.